Hi, and welcome to The Green Elephant, the show that takes sustainability, climate change, social and environmental issues and eats them, one fact at a time. We're all about inspiring sustainable habits. So sit back, relax, have fun, and learn together with your hosts, Russell and Mike.
This episode is brought to you by the fact that 1 million plastic bottles are bought every single minute. And the fact that supermarkets in the UK sell 59 billion pieces of single-use plastic every year. Yeah. And today's show is entitled Supermarkets, Heroes or Villains? Or Filling the Sustainability Basket. Hey, Russell.
All right, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
I've just been horrified by the facts.
I know, 59 billion pieces of plastic. That is
every year. I don't know. But even to be honest, why people are buying plastic bottles still, you know, and when you consider a lot of that is water, and we're going to probably see, well, we are going to do a piece on water because water is a huge problem in the world. We, you know, and there's more facts about that you can shake a stick at. But that a lot of people are still buying water in those plastic bottles, which is just.
You know, we'll come to this, but it's not just water, it's your cosmetics and your toiletries and your kitchen cleaners and your cooking oils and all sorts of other things. But I guess, you know, we've seen a fundamental shift really in the way that we all go shopping, because you go back to my parents or my grandparents and it would have been completely different. They would have gone to the bakers, they would have gone to the butchers, the grocers, the chemists, the newsagents. But now we go to Tesco and Aldi and Lidl and Sainsbury's and Walmart and Yongui and people like that. And you know Yongui are, don't you?
I have no idea.
Well, I thought I'd throw that one in there.
You're right. You've never lived in a city, mister.
I thought, is he listening or not? And you completely know. Yongui, one of the biggest supermarkets in China. There we are.
Oh, right. Yeah, because I go there all the time. That would be one hell of a commute. I'm just popping out to Yongui.
The most sustainable supermarket that Russell could go to in China.
Yeah, I took a flight to get there.
So it's different, and it affects so many aspects of our life. There are so many things that we have to go to the supermarket for. So you know, compare it to all the other things we do in life. Yeah. Supermarkets have this disproportionately large impact on what we do and how we do it.
And to be honest, they're almost a front. They're potentially they could look amazing. You know, you go into some of the unless Carrefour, you could go into was a Waitrose.
Yep.
You know, a great ethics and a very good front. But how do we know they've done, you know, the checks further down the line? They could be, you know, getting bleached chicken from America. I know they're not. Before I get a lawsuit in, but you know. We take it on trust, absolutely on trust, and go to Asda because it's cheaper, or go to Lidl because it's seriously cheaper, or whatever, or because we like the chocolates at, you know, Aldi. But then you kind of accept stuff, but they are essentially a front for possibly good or bad practice behind.
And I think that there's any number of things that they front up. If we take kind of waste as an example, kind of food waste, I mean, there's a fact here that says 800,000 tons of waste from food and beverage products are produced, which would be enough to fill 10 yard skips to extend from London to Sydney, or cover the whole of Greater London to a depth of 2.5 centimeters. I mean, it's huge amounts of food waste that are produced by the, you know, the food and drink and supermarkets industry. And, you know,
they don't directly create that food waste. Obviously, they sell it to people that then waste it. But I think part of the problem that supermarkets have created is a throwaway mentality. Yeah. So things are so cheap.
Yeah.
That it doesn't matter if they spoil, because, you know, it's only 50p for another bunch of bananas, and so if they all go black and I throw them away, who cares? It's not that expensive.
No, and absolutely. And I think, you know, the buy one get one free, two for three, whether you need another one or not, it doesn't matter. You kind of, you're incentivized
to buy them,
to buy the offer. And those offers are not targeted at, doing good. The offers are targeted at making profits for the supermarkets, because, you know, it's not like they say 3 for 2 on bananas or 3 for 2 on apples. It's 3 for 2 on chocolate bars and 3 for 2 on fizzy pizzas drinks. And I mean, look at the advertising. There's a fact here that 46% of all food and drink advertising goes on confectionery, sweet, savory snacks and soft drinks. And on the flip side, only 2.5% of food and drink advertising goes on fruit and vegetables.
I know we are being kind of supermarket hitting here, that the wonky food generation thing.
Yeah.
Now, when I grew up, you had humorous carrots and unbent bananas and turnips, and you had a humorous.
There's a Blackadder episode about that, isn't there?
Yeah. Oh no, don't start me on Blackadder, I'll start quoting stuff. But yeah, but the, we'll have to get a quote about the green, actually. It was a good quote. It's thrown me completely. The advertising those things. I did read something the other day, and I haven't got the actual fact, but if I can find it, that potato crisps, so one of these things that they probably throw half their marketing budget at, are the single most fattening product that people can eat, because people tend to overeat it. It's very and it's absolutely laden, usually the normal cooked ones are absolutely laden with fat, and so you know, you get that knock-on effect. Not only is it, you know, not good for you, it has a plastic wrapper and it's not necessarily that green, and heavens only knows where they got all the produce from, and yet that's the stuff they're plugging. And then of course you waste it, and also the other thing is massive bags of stuff. You buy a big bag of crisps nowadays, you don't buy a little small bag of, in fact, if you bought one of the normal size bag of crisps, you'd be seriously disappointed.
You would be,
because you go down the route of Mars bars aren't as small, big as they used to be, but you know, you get this real they're throwing the consciousness of the nation by overselling stuff, big stuff. Oh yeah, I'll have that off, and then I will eat it on my own, because I can't be, I'll wrap it up and I'll throw it away otherwise.
So I think they, you know, they may be not directly responsible, but they front up these things. So we've talked about waste and recycling, and I guess packaging. We touched on the plastic bottles, but why is it that my 6 apples come in a plastic wrapper? Why is it my grapes come in a plastic tray? Why is it my donuts, not that I eat donuts, why the donuts come in a plastic tray? Just everything comes in unnecessary packaging. And
That was the point I was going to make. It was because you threw me with the Blackadder quote, and I now still haven't got it out in the end. But it was the wonky vegetable stuff. Is that they got really behind selling this wonky vegetable stuff, and we were very familiar with it. The wonky vegetables were the humorous element of buying vegetables. But now what you can do is you can go in and buy specially packaged in plastic wonky vegetables.
Yeah,
because, you know, if I didn't tell you it was wonky, you wouldn't know.
No, it was wonky. Yeah.
And it seems to have almost special marketing for stuff that is exactly the same as that. It's just slightly small. And when you look at it, you go, there's nothing wonky about this. It's just a bit small or a bit big or a bit less bent or a bit too bent or a bit discolored. And you're going, what a waste. Food waste on the farm. We're talking about as another time.
But that goes on to the kind of the production methods, because the supermarkets are the largest buyers of these things. They have a big say on how these things are produced. So, you know, sticking with the vegetables and the natural products, you know, how are they produced? Are they, you know, are pesticides used when you produce those? What sort of chemicals are involved in the process of washing and cleaning and packaging and whatever else happens? Or, you know, do they promote organic farming, and what does organic, there we go, I get a couple of those
in.
What does organic farming,
you can do that on the video. You don't know what you're doing, do you, on the
podcast? I'm doing
he's wiggling, kind of, he's got rabbit ears,
speechy rabbit ears. with my fingers. But yeah, so what does organic mean? Because it seems that it means different things in different circumstances, and maybe the minimum organic standard isn't really all that organic.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. And I mean, the other thing that I think supermarkets have done is they've also enabled, made it very easy for us to get seasonal fruits, seasonal veg, meats even. I was surprised that venison is a seasonal meat if you go for that kind of thing, when I found out from a butcher the other day. But the reason I didn't know that is because you can go get that every day of the year in in the supermarket. And I can get strawberries in December, and I can get sprouts in the middle of summer. It doesn't matter, because go find a country that can produce it like that.
Yeah.
Or even worse, you know, they can say produced in England, but produced in England at what cost? Yeah. Organically produced in a polytunnel with heaters all year round, and you're thinking, hold on, that might be organic, but it's not particularly sustainable. Or you're eating, you know, stuff from Chile, or, you know, I'm not saying Chilean blueberries or whatever it might be are any are bad, but they're a long way away, and you don't need to eat them every day of the year.
And there's, you know, moving on from, you know, produce and vegetables, there's fish and meat, you know, the production of those, the collection of, you know, are they supporting sustainable fisheries? Are they using ethical meat productions? Is it, you know, mass farming? Is it, you know, battery produced meats? So there's all sorts of other issues that sit in the background. And then moving on from the kind of the animal welfare thing to the welfare of the people, because, you know, you're getting these products that are produced in any number of places and countries around the world, and some of those don't have the same standards of working conditions or job conditions or salaries and payments that we have in the UK. And so, you know, the buying power of the supermarkets has a lot to say in, you know, are these people paid at least the minimum wage? Are they given suitable working conditions? Are they effectively slaves, labor for what they're doing?
And that buying power has affected British farming industry. The milk, again, I haven't got any facts to hand, having spoken to some dairy farmers nearby, you know, essentially they're absolutely on the edge, because if milk had gone through inflation. We did a bit on Freddo's on another podcast.
We did.
And that Freddo's has been disproportionately above inflation. Like, it's twice the price of what it should be if it followed inflation. Mm. Now, there's probably other matters to do with that, popularity being one of them, I expect. But milk has gone the other way, way under inflation, because it's a staple food. And so, lots and lots of people use it, although it's been losing ground in the vegan market, obviously. Mm. So the price has been kept to get people in to buy their milk, because once they buy their milk, they'll go buy the 3-in-1 packet of crisps, or three for the price of a 2 packet of crisps. And so the milk becomes a loss leader, and that loss leader, and the way they do that is by absolutely hammering the producer. And they're getting to the point where they're going, well, I'm selling my pint of milk or litre of milk, how old am I, for
less
pennies
than it costs me to produce
or feed them. And and you go, well, that's just bonkers. So they're shutting down, selling their, and so now we've got a milk crisis coming, but there's not enough milk, and so where are we getting it? Overseas. So we're buying something we could very well produce in this country. We have ample grass, and we're shipping it in to make cheese.
I just noticed another fact that kind of, you know, makes me a bit sad, really, that unhealthy foods tend to be 3 times cheaper than healthy food.
And
we wonder why we have an obesity crisis in the Western world.
Well, and heart disease and diabetes. Yeah. I mean, although I know they're related, but you could also have high salt factors and, you know, the ready-made foods, they're fighting to go and try and get the salt and the sugar down in those. Yeah. It's just the balanced lifestyle, and they're trying to push this far more healthy lifestyle, and, it, and the supermarkets perhaps haven't quite got it nailed yet.
And not doing what they maybe could. I guess bringing it back to home, and to, for us, it's the UK and Cornwall, but you know, it's any other place. You know, having a large supermarket land in your town, or land, you know, in your neighborhood or district, that has an impact on your community, because as I mentioned at the start, the butchers, the bakers, the grocers, the chemists,
candlestick makers,
I'm not sure I've not seen one of those, but I think they're on Etsy these days, aren't they?
there's another subject
there is, but all those small producers who used to serve the community, to give that community its spirit, where you knew the people you used to see in the village shops or the town shops, they're not there because the supermarket has priced them out of business, put them out of business. The convenience and the price means that people are going to the supermarkets, not to the community stores, and we're losing, you know, that part of the community because there's a big supermarket on the edge of town.
And it's quite interesting because I live in the former capital of Cornwall. I'll let people to go research up exactly where that was. I mean, a long, long, long time ago.
Answers in the comments, listeners.
13th century type thing. But we're very fortunate. We're our nearest supermarket is probably 6-7 miles away. And therefore, it is a bit of a hump. But what's happened is that the butchers, and there is a baker's, and there's a deli, and there's a newsagent that sells vegetables, and there's a small co-op, but it's not an overbearing co-op with every product that God created, if you believe that kind of thing. And we've got a candlestick maker, and we've got and we've got all these lots of little niche, almost boutique-y type stores, plus married in with a whole stack of antiques as well. But that, because of that, the community is amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I go down to, I have to schedule to go down and get some meat or to get some veg. I have to schedule time for the chats that I'll have along the way. And even during lockdown made it kind of worse because you had queues, and I'm a dreadful chatterer anyway, and I'll talk to anybody. And you end up in a queue of a very slow moving queue of one inch of shop one out. And of course you get talking. So my trip, apart from queuing, turns into a chin wag, and I'll pass by the butchers now and say hello. But, and it's a really nice community, and that has a real danger.
It's the exception rather than the norm, I think. So most people end up, you know, getting in their car, driving to the supermarket, filling it with food that's perhaps not as healthy as it should be because of the pricing, the advertising. And you know, and so the merry dance goes on. I guess it's
And I think one of the other thing somebody said to me the other day, it was at the top of town, what they said their biggest change during lockdown was that they had a shopping list. And you're thinking, what?
You said, well, do you not have that anyway?
No, and they do, but they used to have a shopping list of three items and then go to the shops and they drive to the shops. And so the price, they've gone to a supermarket and the price has already gone up. And what they've done now is they've got a list, and the list has got longer and longer and longer. And when they've run out, they then go to the shops. One trip, far more efficient shop. You're working off a list, which means you perhaps don't buy the crap that you shouldn't be buying and get drawn towards. You say, what should we have tonight? Oh, what's the cheapest? It's, oh, we're having this tonight because I already planned the meal. And that planning is something that the supermarkets don't want, because much.
They want spontaneous impulse
spontaneous buying of the
which is why all the chocolates by the till, because I'm hoping you're going to grab it, stick your hand out and pick it
that's
up.
Right. And especially with kids.
But it, again, so, it's every conversation, every podcast we've been doing, we come back to the same thing, really, which is about balance. Because there's some good stuff about supermarkets. They are really convenient. They're really cheap. They're there when we want them, and we can get more or less what we want when we want. However, you know, there needs to be a balance between that convenience, The fact they provide thousands of jobs for people, that's great. They keep the shelf stocks, they ensure that we can get the products when we need them. You know, when the early coronavirus issues we had with no toilet roll, the supermarket stacked up and made sure that everybody got toilet roll and things like that. So, you know, there's some really good things that having a supermarket infrastructure can do, but
yeah,
they can make the difference, and they've got the power to make the difference in putting people and planet first. And so,
yes,
but at the moment it's all profit. It's sell the fizzy drinks, the sugary drinks, sell the high margin things, get the impulse buys, you know, lean on the suppliers, get the margins up. And it's all about profit and less about what's best for the planet and what's best for the people. So again, balance.
Throughout, and I think we're probably ambling towards a conclusion there, that we need to there's a choice to be made. We can choose not to shop at a supermarket, but that and that's going to be thrust upon us during lockdown, because you couldn't go out. The essentials needed to be reasonably low, or you had to queue up for ages at a supermarket. That's obviously diminishing now as we get to the end of it, but it's pushed people to buy more local stuff, to buy stuff off farm shops, to buy things.
There's the broader issue, really, is that not everybody can afford the local farm shops.
They're not
the cheapest. You know, the poorest 10% is a fact of UK households would need to spend 74% of their disposable income on food to meet the government's official healthy eating guide. So if you're in the poorest 10%, you have to spend three quarters of your money to eat well. And that's just not possible. And therefore, they go to the supermarkets and they buy the five-pack pizzas because that's what they can afford. And so, it's
agreed.
It's a really tricky area, isn't it? To say, you know, we would say there's some actions out of this discussion, and I wholeheartedly agree with you. Buy local in your country, buy seasonal things. Great thing to do. But we appreciate that isn't possible for everybody.
It's not always possible.
Do it if you can. It's about doing the things that you can do. And if you can't afford local seasonal produce from your local shop, do what you can at the supermarket. You
know, I think that fits. It's a great example of what the UN call planet prosperity and people. You know, you can work for the planet as much as you like, and you can try and fulfill the needs of the people in your household, and you know, and if they've got dietary needs or hates or likes, but all comes down to, you've got to balance that up against your ability to, are you prosperous enough to support the other two sides of the triangle? Because if you're not, then something has to give. And it's not going to be the prosperity, because you've got limited resource on that. Yeah. There's a misbalance there to be resolved.
So here's six quick action points. Everybody listening can do some of these. And if you've got other quick tips and actions, then we'd love to hear your feedback at GreenEllipod on social. Come and find us and come and let us know what you think. But here's our six quick actions related to supermarkets. So if you can, buy local and seasonal products. If you can afford it, buy organic. Look for fair trade and sustainability labels. Reuse your bags. That one's been around for a while, but make sure you do it. Buy loose produce instead of pre-packaged. And if you can walk there, then do that, or go to a local. You'll save money on petrol and you'll reduce your emissions. So there's some quick things that everybody can do.
People might not be able to do all of them. And you say, if it's availability with regards to shops, we live very rural. So the chances of being able to walk to the shop in Cornwall is unlikely. I can.
You can reuse your bags.
But you can buy loose. You can buy loose. Absolutely. A lot of supermarkets are now getting that and saying prepackaged stuff. We will have whole aisles where you can go pick your own stuff and be weighed at the. It's going back 20 years, but it's the right thing to do. Yeah.
So I think we've discussed a lot of negative stuff about supermarkets, but it's, you know, it's not all bad. They have the power to make the difference, and they are trying to get better. There are messages and initiatives coming out of the supermarket that on the face of it looks like they're getting better, but it comes back to, you know, do you know what's happening down the line, and which facts they present are based on reality? So, you know, we keep using them. Let's hope they continue to get better. But it is a sector where, you know, it is an example of profit before people and planet. But we can't.
Yeah, I mean, they do a lot of good work for charity, but you know, it's many of them do like many organisations try and do a little bit for the community, a little bit for charity. Our local Asda does, for example, does, you know, things for different charities, as does Co-op very much so. But it's perhaps there's a little bit further to go.
Yeah, I think so. Great.
And I think, you know, the final point there is that it is our, we have the ability to make the choice. We can make choices, we can make changes, which might not be money restricted, but some changes could be very simple and possibly even save you money.
I think we can all do a little bit without really affecting our lifestyle, and that's what I think we'd ask all the listeners to do.
But they might have a different opinion. We are on many, many social platforms under Green Ellie Pod. We'll remind that one. There is a website called The Green Elephant Show where you can see all the facts that we spout, because sometimes it's not quick enough to write them down, and usually a pretty picture with them, so you can go
and always looking for more facts. Them. So let us know if you've got any other interesting ones,
especially if they're proven.
Absolutely, we need sources.
Yeah, don't make your own facts.
We've got a podcast on that one, so
we have. Yeah,
episode 2. But yeah, great. Okay, Russell, great to talk to you, and we'll catch up again.
I'm sure. Bye bye.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Green Elephant. It's been a pleasure to have your company. If you've got thoughts or comments on anything you've heard on the show, please drop us a line using studio@greenelephant.show. We love hearing your views and ideas. In the meantime, let's carry on the conversation. We're on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, and Twitter as Green Ellie Pod. Come back soon.